Anytime I'm going along here, and I'll try to answer it. What this is just a kind of a consolidation of the things that I've stressed and put a great deal of importance on in the years I've been here, for about 40, well, over 40 years. And right now, I can honestly, truthfully say, without any fudging, without any braggadocio, without any doubt, it's all finally come together. It's here. And I started off, when I did this, by really teaching the sorrows that were to come upon mankind. I went through that very carefully in the Greek language, and I discovered some things in there that just didn't quite mesh up with some other things that were being taught. Tommy Brown and I are a lot like that. So I just went through and taught them, and since the people that were here didn't know much about them to start with, they just accepted it and went on and never did seem strangely changed by it. But that I knew and I believed from the language itself in the times that were going to be known as the beginning of sorrows, that there were some glaring things in there that they taught that I was absolutely positive they were wrong. And there were so many different interpretations of it, I don't see how anybody ever could have understood it. So I studied on that for a long time when I first came here, and then I began to teach it, and I didn't have any trouble at all, because I showed them, even in just the plain English language, the things that I believed and why I believed them. I believed that these things that were going to happen were already being fulfilled in the times of the apostles. I was absolutely positive of it. And when I would go through, I could see where this was fulfilled. I'd go back to another reference scripture. I'd go over another one here and there. And from the actual language itself, most of that was already fulfilled. Not all of it, but most of it. Now, I'm not just talking about that little section about the earthquakes, the famine, the pestilences. I'm not talking just about that. I'm talking about the things that came before it and the things that came after it. And I'm absolutely positive of it. So if you want to know why I'm positive, ask me.
Why are you positive?
Well, because the Greek language, when it got down to talking about the things that had to do with earthquakes, famine, and pestilence, it used a different word that started off with than it did the ones before it. And what the word that started it off with indicated this was something that was had not yet happened, but it would happen late in the tribulation period. I went through all that. And if you want to, you can go back and look at the papers you had before on it. But I also noticed that it also indicated immediately after those sorrows that all of a sudden they began to just go right on ahead, the ones who were interpreting it, and say, well, now this one, now here's what happens. In the last days, we're going to be persecuted, we're going to be arrested, we're going to be thrown in jail, this is going to happen to us, this is going to happen to us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The words that he used were directed toward the apostles. They absolutely were not directed toward us. You say, well, we are going to have things like that happen to us. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But where? I began to see, you know, where? What's he talking about? Where are these prophecies going to be fulfilled? And as I looked at the language, and back then I studied all the time on this kind of stuff, and I wanted to be accepted and I wanted to be liked. But there is no indication whatsoever that it has anything to do with the end time that we're in right now. How do I know that? Just read them. Just sit down. Read Luke chapter 21 and verse 10. And then read the next verse. And all of a sudden, you see what's going to happen, they say, in the end times. That's not true. Read it. And then read what happened to the apostles. Just read what happened. It's an exact overlay of everything that happened to them. And it works right straight on down until they were trapped inside the city of Jerusalem. And so I'm positive. I mean, there's not any doubt in my mind whatsoever. Now, another reason I'm positive, and forgive me for being braggadocio, I'm not. I really have changed. I'm not the same fellow I was. But when I went to the teachers, they couldn't give me a case. And I went to all of them. And I said, why doesn't that mean the disciples? And I showed them the Greek words, the Greek teacher. And they said, well, you've just got to adjust things. Like I said, there's no adjustment here. I said, that's exactly what it says. I said, just show me in Greek where it's different. Show me why that's not the disciples. And show me where we got all this stuff that we're teaching. And it just passed down. Like children, you know, when they get old enough, you pass it on to the next one down. Imogene and I were experts at that. And all we did, you know, when they came to arrest Jesus the first time, and the scribes and Pharisees had sent them to them, they went up to him, and they started listening to him. And he was teaching, and the people were all listening. He had a huge congregation at that time. And they were all listening, including the ones that were sent to arrest him. They listened to that. It amazed them. It absolutely amazed them. How do I know that? They went back to the high priest, and everybody was scared of the high priest. And he wanted to know, well, where did he? Where is he? They said, we didn't arrest him. And the high priest said, what? And they said, never man spake like this before. Now, what did they mean? Well, this is why I like Bible Manners and Customs. What they meant was, and this was the way it worked. This is what I was taught in Bible Manners and Customs, and I also researched it personally for myself in the Hebrew culture. If anybody had a question, they were supposed to go to the priest. They could go to the high priest, but most of the time he was pretty busy, at least supposedly. And so they would go just to a regular priest of their synagogue. All the synagogues had a priest. And they would normally just go to their synagogue rabbi. And they would say, what does this mean? And here is the answer they would give them. According to Rabbi Shemoah, it means that Jesus wore false teeth. I'm making these up, but it's the truth that I'm telling you. And then that would satisfy them, you know, and it made sense to them if the rabbi said it. But another one might go to some other rabbi and ask what it meant, and it depends on which rabbi he studied under. Now, Paul studied under Gamaliel, who was the greatest of them all. And Gamaliel, when they would go to him, he was honest. He would tell them, I'm not sure what it means, but I believe it has to do with the Messiah. And he would tell them about these things. And Paul came to understand all that, such he was fully equipped, and God was instrumental in it, when he was called out to stand witness. And he had to hear what Stephen had said. He couldn't be a witness unless he did. And he was probably the hotshot lawyer for him at that time, but that's a probably. In any case, what happened was, they never got an answer. That's all they ever got. How would you feel if the only answer you ever got when you came to your rabbi, he just gave you an answer, but he didn't prove it? He didn't show you what the words meant and why the words meant that and why they were put together. They never did that. They would quote some other rabbi. Why? They were scared to death somebody would call them down. But they wouldn't call down Gamaliel because they were all scared of him. And there was another two or three other rabbis in history that were just like that. And they would all quote these rabbis. And that's the truth. So never a man spake like this before. When Jesus said something, he proved it. Now, he wasn't braggadocio. He didn't try to force it on you. And he didn't say, because I say this, this is right. And he did a lot of interpreting. That's how you come to find out what Scripture is. You interpret it. And you have to look to other places to interpret it. And you don't have fantasies about it and decide it meant this or that or this or that. And I've always told you, this is what I think. It's not what I know. But when I do know, I tell you, that's it. And if I ever discover I'm wrong, even though it's embarrassing, I'll tell you I'm wrong. Because you have to answer to God for your lives. I have to answer to God for my life. And what is my life? My life is to learn the truth, do what Jesus says, and teach you all what he said. And so preachers get irritated with sometimes because they don't do it their way. I don't care how somebody does it, just as long as it bears a semblance of truth. So that's why I can. Do you remember what you asked?
Yeah, why did you believe that? I understand.
You understand now? Did you explain it to him, Donna?
She did. She told me what
tell him,
you were saying.
Tell him when he gets home.
She interpreted the tongue.
Well, Reverend Ellis, did you understand that?
Yes, I can.
Well, that's good. Now, let's go on. It says, all the positioning of man's flesh, military logistics, and expertise that I have believed for some 40 years would mesh together for the last war of the age of the Gentiles. I knew it had to mesh. And I was very bold about it. And I argued about it with people when I'd go to other churches that the scripture that says, many shall run to and fro and knowledge shall be increased in Daniel, in the last chapter. I told them, I said, that's not just for military expertise. That's not just for bombs. That's not just for all the tremendous advances we've made in fighter planes and in warships and in pilots' ability to do things. I said, that's not just referring to that. It is. But I said, it's referring to man's understanding of the word. Now think about it. I was dumb when I got saved. Think of all those people that get saved and never learn anything. They are spiritually dumb. And it's nobody's fault but theirs. Because the Lord has a very interesting book that he made. And so I took that to mean that, and I told people that. And when I first started, I knew I had been taught Daniel's 70 weeks and of years. And I knew that they weren't teaching it like that in our work anymore. And I learned it from the Baptist, from the leading Baptist scholars. When I was a boy, that's all they had. Where I went to church in that old creek, and they just got the books from the Dallas Theological Seminary. And Robinson was the guy who pioneered that. He was one of the leading Baptists. And a lot of others did. I got a reference source to go from here to the wall. People said, well, you don't have any reference for that. I said, just hang on a minute. And I gave them a set of references to go down to the bottom. They never went back and looked. I never went back and looked what they taught me in the seminary. And the preachers that taught me when I was growing up as a boy, they had those old books from the conservative seminary, Baptist seminaries, and I was taught that. And when I was taught that, it made sense to me. So when I came back and I enrolled in the seminary and I sat in a few classes, I said, now, one of the reasons God put you in the military is because you know about petty jealousy. Isn't that the truth? And there are jealousy between officers. There are jealousy between enlisted men. And I even had one officer that was jealous of me, and he had a problem, mental problem. So there's no difference in the military. You learn how to brown nose. If you got a family with a bunch of kids, You think you're going to be unhappy with your commander? No, you're just going to, you're going to be kind to him, even if he's a P-A-S-T-A-R-D. And after I got to know these people, I liked them. I had a little colonel. I'd do anything he wanted, because the man was he was a soldier. He was an officer. And the guy, I threw him out of my office one day because I was trying to quit smoking. I'm talking about a bird colonel. I was so mad, I could have killed him. But he knew I was trying to quit smoking. And I just turned and got him a little bitty fella and just put him outside and shut the door. I thought, well, I'm going to lose several stripes over this. He never said a word to me about it. From that day forward, I respected that man. But that's just the way it is. So I learned a lot about jealousy and envy and how you get enlistment and get up and all that ranks. And I happen to have some really good commanders. I happen to have some I worked directly for, and they were the very best. And I just loved them to death, and they were fair with me, and I worked so hard for them, I'd do anything I could for them, or would for them. And I'd try to do it exceptionally well, and they appreciated it. But when you talk about these things here, when you talk about the initial attack, why did I, during the next administration, the Assyrian Antichrist will start the war that begins the last 1,335 days of the tribulation period. Okay, why in all my teaching did I spend so much time on from the beginning of the time that Israel is attacked, and how come I didn't mention a whole lot before it? I did mention a whole lot before it, but I would go in there and I would pick out when something was happening before it, and I would teach it as happening before it. And because I knew if I ever told people where I put the Hudna and where the time was that Israel would be in a Hudna, I wasn't sure of it. I was as sure of it as I could be as an analyst. But there was something wrong with that period ahead of it. In other words, I knew that the tribulation period was going to be 1,335 days long. It was hard for me to put that in there where it fit. So I thought, and I believe God led me in this, because I thought, this is not the time. This is not the time to deal with this. This was way back in the last century that I discovered it. And I just said, I can't. Where am I going to put that? Where? So finally, and I think God gave me the idea. I think it came from Him. Just start it right there where you do know what you're doing. And other things that happened before it, if you know that it happens before it, just teach that, but don't teach where it's going to occur. So I did that until about 1992. And I fought a battle between myself, my conscience, the Lord, man, and whatever. And finally I said, I'm going to have to teach this now because I understand it. So I began to teach it like you've got it on those charts and diagrams. And nobody challenged me. By this time, people had so much respect for me that they didn't challenge me. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to start teaching them about the Lord. I knew the things that Leonard has taught, but he ran across some things I hadn't thought about before. And the more he taught, the more I appreciated it, the more I respected him for it. And so I realized that I didn't know as much about the Lord as I should, but I did believe in a pre-incarnate Christ. I did believe He was the Alpha and Omega and all that. But once I got that down, I said, okay, now, the people know that. And when I started really hammering away on all power in heaven and earth is given unto me, go ye therefore and teach all nations. I said, you're an analyst. Why aren't you teaching them that? And I knew why. It was because nobody else taught it. I'm not Jeremiah. I'm not Isaiah. I'm not any of those Old Testament prophets. They were diligent men that feared and respected the Lord. But if you want to know the truth, my life has been continually subjected to different things that aren't said to my face. And I pick them up. But you know, that was good training. Best training I ever had is to be criticized and to not be guilty. Sometimes I was guilty. But this thing about the things that happened before the initial attack against Israel, which begins with 1,335 days left to be fulfilled in the tribulation period. That was easy to interpret. And I figured that one out a long time ago. God led me and I figured it out because He led me and because He also chose for me to be a synoptic analyst. I did not choose it for myself. So finally, I figured out. And when I began to see it happen, I began to tell you. That's what's happening over there right now. And in these things that I've been teaching, I told you exactly what was going to happen before it happened. And so I'm going to talk about that now, maybe just kind of skip over some of this other stuff. The time of the 1,335 days will contain the initial attack, a Negev peace and safety truce, a Hudna. That's where the 1,225 days occurs. The rapture and the last battle of Armageddon. Jesus will return with the saved to end this final battle and begin His millennial reign, and He will also let Michael the archangel protect a remnant even during the tribulation period known as the beginning of sorrows, not the beginning of sorrows, but the vials of wrath, and He'll bring them forth and start a new race of people that are in the same spiritual condition that we're in. Now, this is something I issued in 2003, back in 2003. It was Archive Prophecy Update number 102, January 10th, 2003. The final 1,335 days of the Gentile age. And I told people, Antichrist attacks Israel. He shall enter also into the glory land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. I knew that was true. I knew it had to be true. I was a little suspicious about the attack of the children of Ammon, but I studied. It wasn't long until God let me figure it out. Anytime I say I studied, and it looks like I'm trying to give myself credit, I give you my word before the Lord. I've learned much better than that. In 1 Corinthians 15:51 plus Revelation 10:7, Revelation 11:15-18, that's the rapture. I had a preacher down in Texas who I dearly love and who just happens to be the president of a seminary. His name's Ray Brooks. I was down there and I was teaching, and he couldn't tell what I believed about the rapture because I didn't want people to know. I had a message that God gave me that I wanted this world to know about. I wanted this church to know about it. And I wanted this world to know about it. And I wanted to know about it. So Ray was listening to me, and he couldn't tell exactly when I thought the rapture was. I didn't know what Ray Brooks believed. I didn't know what the seminary down there believed. So after it was over with, he called me in the office and said, let's talk about this rapture thing. He showed me the very scriptures that I have used for more than 40 years to teach the rapture. He showed them to me. And he said, what do you think of that? I said, well, I'll be. I said, that's unusual, isn't it? I said, I tell you what, Ray, because I wanted to think, this is devious on my part, that he taught me that. So I said, well, I'll just look that over. I got home, and I never told him that I had known that. But I started teaching it down there, and I guess he got the message. And I started teaching it all over Texas. And you talk about stirring up a bunch of firecrackers, but not one of those firecrackers ever came forward to challenge me. Not one of them ever challenged me to a debate. And I offered $500 to anybody who could disprove what I taught about the rapture. And they didn't do it. You know why? They're pastors of churches. They're hired. That's the way they make their living. So do I condemn them for doing that? Absolutely not. But a man's got to make a choice one way or the other. And I had to make a choice. And I had 7 children. And if God had brought me through Vietnam, and he did, and if God had preserved those children's lives when one time they thought one of them was going to die, if he hadn't done all that stuff, I might have just buckled under and played the game and told fairy tales to you so I could stay on as a pastor and be popular and pastor a big church and make enough money to feed my family. Don't think that doesn't enter a pastor's mind. If you think that we're some kind of special commodity, and God knows what he's doing when he calls us, and he knows what we'll do afterwards. But I tell you what, it's a hard choice sometimes. But I made the choice. And here I am, 40 years later, with my children taking care of me, with the church loving me, caring for me, and with me actually loving you and caring for you. I give you my word before the Lord. I love every one of you. And I care for every one of you. And I'm doing everything I can to suppress my carnal nature and to be as pleasant as I can be, because that's what the Lord wants, and that's what a church needs as a pastor. So that's number one. Let's see what we got over here. Number two. He says, and from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be a 1,290 days. Well, that just so happens that if you go back and check Jesus' ministry, you'll discover that he went to 3 Passovers. He went to 3 Passovers. He didn't quite make 3.5 years, but he went to 3 Passovers, and he actually led the disciples, called them out, and they were his church for 1,185 days. Well, the other 1,335, he never got to fulfill. That's the way it happened. And that's why the sacrifice was taken away when Jesus was crucified. So what happened? Daniel's 70th weeks of years clock stopped right there. It stopped right there. And not one sacrifice has ever been accepted by God from Israel since that time. Not one. He'll accept a sacrifice if they're New Testament church members, if they'll teach what he said like New Testament church members. But not one sacrifice has ever been accepted. You say, well, when is one going to be accepted? Well, at the end of 1,335 days, they're going to be accepted again. And Israel is going to have a new nation running around with people that is allowed to come through the tribulation period. The part of it that's known as the vials of wrath. God will preserve their lives. Michael the archangel will stand up. He will preserve their lives. And Jesus will come back and he will bring them into the millennial reign. And they will have to do just exactly what we're doing right now. worshiping God in Israel the way we worship now in period and in space. And that's what's going to happen. Now, why do I know it? Because God taught me. Well, do you know why he taught me? I can't answer that question. I didn't have anything to do with it. But I've always wanted to please him. Don't ask me why. I ran away from him for a long time, but I've always wanted to please him. And once he called me to preach, I just threw my life into it, my whole soul and body. That's it. I had no idea I had so much to learn, but I've still got so much to learn. Now, and he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon, Harmageddon, the Tel of Megiddo. Now, the second advent of Jesus ends Armageddon. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days, the end of the tribulation period. Now, if you look at Daniel 12:13, Daniel stands in his millennial allotment. When he comes back, he's got an inheritance. He's got a millennial allotment. It's already been planned out. Like Leonard has told you, it was established before the foundation of the world. He knew exactly what Daniel was going to do. And it's all up there. It's his inheritance. How much of it is Daniel going to get? Well, I have no idea. But I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't get all of it. Nothing would surprise me. But Daniel was one of the most faithful men who ever lived. And he wasn't a coward like I am. But a coward has his day. And who knows? Maybe I'll get a chance. Maybe because of what Daniel did, I'll take a chance. You see, when you go in there and it says, remember them that have the rule over you. That actually says, remember them that have had. That's inspired words. That have had rule over you. Who's he talking about? Daniel? Jeremiah? The prophets? That's what he's talking about. He said, remember them. And then he says, remember how their life ended. I told you I thought Daniel may get the full inheritance. I told you he wasn't a coward. I am. But God's not. And as long as I'm relying on God, and as long as I'm like a little helpless child toward him, and as long as I'm teaching and preaching the word, and afterwards the church is baptizing them by church authority, as long as I'm doing that, I'm headed in the right direction. I don't expect to be like the prophets were, but I tell you, I've learned a lot about how to worship God. Look at this here. What do you think? Well, look at this. Now picture that little bunch, him leading them, after Judas left, 11 of them, and just look them over real good. They probably hadn't had a bath for several days. And I'm sure their clothes were a little shabby. And there they were. And that was the most glorious little body that ever lived on this earth. That's the truth. God does not look at things like we look at things. And so we have to learn to look at the ones that came before us and remember them, and ask ourselves, where are they now? We'll read the 11th chapter of Hebrews. Where are they now? They're waiting for us. They're waiting for us. The full promise hasn't been completely fulfilled for them. They're waiting. Their souls are waiting for us in heaven. They're going to be a part of the first resurrection. Some of them have already gone up there, like Enoch, and like Elijah, like Moses. You say, well, what do you think of that? I think God knows what he's doing. But I also know that God's taught me what he's doing. And I didn't learn it myself. He taught me, and he taught me from his word, and he taught me by his spirit. And Jesus sent his own spirit back to tension to teach me. And there aren't three gods. There are three offices. And I was taught out of each one of them. And he didn't have to do that. But he loved me. And I can only love him because he first loved me. So here we are. What do we got to worry about? If God be for us, who can be against us? That's why I'm a missionary Baptist. That's why I'm a missionary Baptist preacher. That's why I ask people to do the things that the Bible says, because I want to be sure. I've probably baptized some people that didn't need to be baptized. But do you know God never made me feel bad about it? He never made me feel bad about it. And that's the truth. And I just think that God told us he had all power. Jesus said all power is given unto me in heaven and earth. He told us to go ye therefore and teach all nations. Word for nations is ethnics, all groups, ethnics. And then he told us to baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. And then he encouraged them to get in the church after the baptism and work. And it's not impossible. It's not impossible. God doesn't expect you to be like the prophets and like those people that he doesn't expect that. God just expects you to make an effort. Think of all the people that aren't mentioned in the Bible that are going to live in that city in the Old and New Testament that aren't mentioned in the Bible. You say, well, I'll be jealous. No, you won't. Man, I would never be jealous of any of them. Never. Because whatever God decides, I'm for it. And whatever God does, I'm for it. And that's just it. Now, he says, second advent of Jesus ends Armageddon. He says, blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,305 days. Daniel is in that category. Daniel 12:3. Daniel stands in his millennial allotment. He's already got it. He's got his inheritance, but he doesn't have his glorified body yet. Moses does, I think, and Elijah does, I think. But if I get up there and they haven't gotten it yet, you think I'm going to hold up my hand and say, that ain't fair? Lord have mercy, I'm going to be so scared about what's going to happen to me. Even if I love those people, I'll be scared to death what's going to happen to me. You said, oh, you'll get over that. No, I won't. I just know me. I wouldn't recognize myself without my carnal nature. But go thy way until the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the days. That's it. Here we go in the millennial reign. I get to talk to Daniel. I'll get to see what Daniel's doing. I will get to see what God's doing. I get to see what everybody's doing. And I'm going to be enjoying every minute of it. And I'm going to be enjoying whatever God gives me to do. Because God is just and the justifier of them that love Jesus. Now, scan down to read previous blogs. This has been prophesied in the Middle East. These things are now moving into real time. We finally got all three of those things. What Jesus said was going to happen to the my goodness gracious. What was going to happen to the first New Testament church members? What was going to happen to us? When it was going to happen, and he's already fulfilled that. Now, it's coming to fruition. There's more persecution now than there ever has been, and it's growing, and it's not going to get any better. There's more shedding of blood over there, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse, and we're not going to do a blinking thing about it. I guess cowards love company. And I guess there's a bunch of them out there that must love me. But a coward can stand up and try. And we're all cowards basically down inside in our carnal nature, unless we're psychosomatic or whatever, schizophrenic. He says, I've waited 44 years for Middle East events to align with scriptures. It's taken that long, such that interpretation of them to line up in real time was present. It's here now. I guarantee you, it's here now. I promise you, it's here now. And I'm saying all that knowing I'm going to have to answer to Christ for what I'm saying. It's here right now, and it's coming. And I believe I can be sure enough of it to tell you it's coming in the next administration that comes into office. I believe it. I'm convinced of it, and I'm not going to back down. If it doesn't happen, who knows? Maybe I'll die, and you can say, well, old Brother Michael Murray was wrong. And old Brother Michael Murray will say, well, it ain't so bad up here. Shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Last year, I watched world events line up with the prophecies of old. This year, I have watched them all move into real-time occurrences. The time has come for mice and men to consider four blogs of this year. What I've taught for 40 years is now lining up for the millennium. Please do take time to read the last four blogs that we issued this year. When we were in the seals in the past, we are now, and we are headed